This is Kevin Campbell, and you're listening to Chewing the Cud with the Irish Toffees. Come on, you Blues!
Welcome along, folks, to the next episode of Chewing the Cud. Today, we're going to look back at a usual depressing start against Fulham. And then we look forward to Aston Villa away on Sunday. Now, Chris can't make it today, so it's just myself, Collie and Richie. Good afternoon, boys.
Hi, lads.
Hi, lads. How's things?
All good. But the usual pre-season hype just deflated with a loss. It's just, I don't know why we got a hope so fast. I just really don't. The gas thing, and same as last year, Collie, like I said, all this optimism and the buzz around the ground and the flight and the airport and everything going over. And then it just like someone bust a balloon when the team news came out. Maupay and Keane, and you could just hear it everywhere go, oh, fuck's sake, lads. It was just, I think the team news now, that's an event in itself, but like the release of the team news. But I just don't understand, whatever about Michael Keane, I just do not understand Maupay starting last Saturday.
It's the hope that kills you, Joe, isn't it, really? And you're spot on in relation to the team news. And then you see, like, Calvert-Lewin isn't even in the squad, let alone, you know. It's rinse and repeat, really, from the club. It's we can afford to lose 3 or 4 games on the spin without a recognised centre-forward who can play within the system that we want to play. That's just shocking, Joe. It really is. And, you know, it's so frustrating. It really is. It's so frustrating. And, you know, we should have taken the 3 points from that game on Saturday, Joe. Some of the chances that were missed, and not just by Maupay, you know, the likes of Decore, he could have squared it. Look, we could go two, but there's no way we should have come away with nothing from that game. But Maupay should not be starting a Premiership game as a number nine, as a solo number nine, or as a solo striker, because that's just not the game. And I pity the chap in some ways, but he's just not the right player for the system that we wanted to play either last year when he was brought in, or completely this year, you know, the Quinnery. But you can't miss them chances, Joe, and expect to take anything from a Premiership game. And then, lo and behold, we do everything in the second half. Performances drop. They go up the pitch, score, and they could have gone and scored another one or two easily, you know, the Quinnery. Just a really, really poor opening game. And it is the hope that kills you, unfortunately, Joe. I was so looking forward to, you know, sitting down. I know you guys were over at the game, so I seen a different perspective than what I'm sure you boys have. But like, even there, you're sitting down and you're watching the game, and like, the chances just keep coming and coming and coming. And you just know deep down your heart and soul that, you know, if we don't turn over, you know, one of these chances will end up losing. And that, unfortunately, is what we did. Now, I will say, Joe, that goal should never have been disallowed. It was actually absolutely shocking decision. And for VAR not to even get involved. But anyway, it is what it is, Joe. We've started badly yet again, and we have an uphill task ahead of us on Sunday.
Yeah, that's the thing, which, again, it's just the hope and the expectation. It just, I don't know why we do it, build ourselves up. Maybe we should go the other way, lower our expectations really low, and then get excited then when we actually start to do well. But I agree with Collie. I do feel sorry for Maupay. I really, and listen, I just need to touch on the Instagram post or tweet, whatever it was afterwards. It was just absolutely disgusting. There's no need for that, no matter who we follow, to say something. I'm not even going to repeat it. To do something with that online. But again, it just goes back to what I said loads of times. These things aren't policed. These forums aren't policed properly. So it's a free-for-all for anybody to say shit like that. But like, his confidence is just zero. So to give him a start in the first Premier League match of the season, he could have shut us all up after a few seconds if he put that ball in the back of the net. But he could just see it. He has no confidence whatsoever.
Yeah, it's tough on him because it's you know, you just want one to go in to hopefully see can he turn the corner. But I think I know you're right, kind of saying, oh, here's the team news, and there's nothing to get excited about. It's 10 of the same 11 with a 38-year-old put in left back that basically just about kept us up by the skin of our teeth last year. So you're saying, Jesus, here we go again, basically, you know. And due to lack of squad depth, you're straight in first day of the season with square pegs and round holes, shoving the Wobie out one side, shoving Garner the other side. There's very few kind of saying, right, we're Maupay up front, so you're not playing to your strengths at all the way you've been playing. And to be fair, I thought we were pretty good. You know, I wasn't disappointed with the performance. I was frustrated with the result more so than anything at the end of it, because we had done everything in our power to win three games. You know, and how we came out of it was baffling, and it's frustration. But yeah, on the Maupay thing, you know, you just can't. If you're a centre forward, you got to put him in. You got to finish those chances. I don't think that they were the biggest chances. I agree with Collie. I think the Decore's, Patterson's were.
Patterson, more so.
No, you just can't be missing. You can't be missing those, but when you're a centre forward and you're getting three guilt and chances like you did, you've got to be putting one of them away at least, you know. And if you'd have got that one in the first minute, I mean, I think we win that game comfortably, you know, and we could have been two up after 5 minutes. But as it turns out, basically confidence rocks, and then the negativity starts to set in and the desperation starts to set in, and you just see it and says, oh, here we go. But I feel for the chap at this stage, you know, because it's just frustrating. And it's apart from what he needs to be doing, I thought he was okay. Like, you know, he was involved in the build-up. He was getting into positions. And if it was someone that we'd paid big money for and we didn't have the history of last season, and he said, Jesus, he gets one of them, he's going to be on a flyer. You know, it's going to come off and it has to go in at some stage. But at this point, looking at him, and it's just not going to happen for the chap, is it? You know, and it's frustrating for us. But it goes back, and you say he shouldn't start in there. I don't know what other options we had. I don't think Danjuma was fully fit to start. And then you're looking at Cannon, who was out injured himself for a while and who hasn't started a Premier League game. So where do you go? And that's down to recruitment, you know, back down to how are we in this position? Third year in a row and we don't have a centre forward to play apart from this fella. It's ridiculous, you know, and that has cost us, you know. And we'll probably go in Saturday or Sunday in the same stage without a recognised forward apart from Maupen. You're basically just throwing points down to Swanee.
Yeah, I'm hoping that Calvert-Lewin would start on. So I know we played 90 minutes match against United, so fingers crossed.
And just on that, Joe, you know, if you could say, right, he played 90 on Tuesday, but he can't play 45 on Saturday. If he starts that 45 and the plan is get him off at half time, no matter what the story is, that game is done and dusted. You know, I don't know the science behind it and what's driving Sean Dyche's fitness levels, but surely to Jesus that he could do 45 minutes if he could do an hour on Tuesday in a behind closed doors and then be expected to go out today.
Yeah, I'm just wondering, did Bertram's child have anything to do with Saturday? I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know either.
Again, like lack of communication, so we're just guessing. It's just, they don't tell us anything. Just the chances, like the car he had, Colley, was just, like, he should be burying them chances after, like, the last season. But it's just, it's a confidence in these players that, I don't know, they're still nervous. Maybe first game of the season, that kind of stuff, but he should really be putting that away. Like, it's 2 yards out, 3 yards out.
Not only that, Joe, I think his other chance where he should have squared it to Garner, you know. That's the one you're talking about. Yeah, sorry. That should have been squared to Garner, and Garner would have buried it. Decore is a bit of a... I think Chris referred to him last season as a mad whore. He is, in a way.
We're still supposed to get them T-shirts done.
Yeah. I'll tell you, we sell thousands of them. You know, he's one of them strange players. He literally can't pass the ball from A to B, but then he comes out with a worldy like he did in the last game of the season. But then, you know, we go back to the old Decore, you know, at the weekend. His energy levels are fantastic, but unfortunately his game isn't... That's a part of his game that say he could improve, that's for sure, you know, that kind of way. But, you know, there was others as well that... Like, what going on here is if I actually thought we'd done all right, Joe, particularly in the first half.
Apart from scoring.
Yeah. Now, we'll it's kind of helps to win half, games.
I'm not being, yeah. I'm genuinely not being smart at all. But...
No, 100%. And unless you put the ball in the back of the net, you're not going to get any points, you know. But, you know, it's not all doom and gloom. Okay, we lost. I appreciate that. And levels did drop by certain players in the second half. But I thought the first half we were on it. But you could visibly see it on the TV, the levels dropping in the second half. And we were being pushed back and pushed back and pushed back. And look, the inevitable happens and they pop up, got a goal and probably could have gone on and scored another two or three. But, you know, it's not all doom and gloom, but you need to be taking points against home, against Fulham, because I do think Fulham will be certainly lower than they were last year, I have to say.
Yeah, I listen, it was the talk after the match. It's games like these at home, which because our away form was just rubbish, to be honest. And there's games with this at home, we need to win or at least get something out of to not have us in trouble again like last year. And we can't keep relying on beating Arsenal, Chelsea and so on at home to get us these points that we need. Just someone I know, we did play well, but someone I was disappointed in big time was Onana. And he's turned into one of these lads. He did it after the match on Saturday. Went around, he's like a cheerleader, and he's come on. It's put like I thought he was piss poor, especially defensively. Like, he's doing all right getting forward, but he seems to forget to come back, which leaves Ghana kind of in a bit of a quandary there, because there's times there where Ghana was up against two or three lads on his own. So I think Onana, he needs to look at that side of his game.
He's a strange one, because I thought first half he was good, you know, he was involved in everything, kind of decent going forward. He was involved in the game, and I think that's a lot of the problem, that the game seems to pass him by a lot. Ooh. And he just phases where he's just totally isolated from it, nothing to do with the game, and the game passes him by. And I think that's the problem, like, because then, as you said, that there's the likes of Ghana is there trying to pick up the pieces and he's nowhere to be seen. And it's just fits and starts. And I think that's basically on him to get involved more in the game and to be looking for the ball more and more support. But yeah, I think that there is kind of lulls within the game, but I don't know if that's a, you know, he's still raw, you know, played a lot last season, all right, but you want to see some improvements and things and a whole lot. But yeah, I thought first half he was good, second half was well off it. And obviously they got on top and they controlled then second half, or kind of parts of the second half, and that's kind of was taken over. I'm not saying it's down to him, but it's a funny one, because you look at some things and I thought he'd done really well. But then when you look at it on the whole, I just thought that he disappeared for long periods, and you said, Jesus, where is he? And it's a common occurrence. It's something that I've kind of noticed with him, is that he tends to go missing for periods of the game. And for, you know, in that engine room, you need someone who's there looking, kind of looking at the ball. And as you said, kind of getting up at both sides at a pitch. But I think it's both ways as well. And just touch on Decore. I know you're kind of on about him there a minute ago, that the worst thing you can give that fella is time.
You know,
because he overthinks, and he just doesn't know what to do, be it a pass, be it a shot, and he could fall over. You remember, I think it was at Leeds last season, he was in through, Sims kicked it over his head, and he was in one-on-one and done the very same thing. And it was the same as Harry, that just took too many touches, you know, ran into the keeper with it and had options. But yeah, if he's on instinct, he's fine. But when he's time to think at all, he's an absolute...
Liability. It's just a stride. Just on Onana, Carl, would it be a case of just having him to sit a little bit deeper, where he could deal with defensive stuff? That, well, not he can't. Look, he has to do it if he's sitting in there, like not behind Ghana, maybe instead of Ghana. I don't know, because like I said, he's good going forward, but he doesn't come back. He doesn't, like the Carter, like you said, with up and down the pitch all day long, but he doesn't do that, so I don't know.
But it's hard to tell Joe what he's being told and what Deutsch wants from him. I tend to agree with Richie. I thought he actually done okay in the first half, but second half he was nowhere near it. So you don't know whether Deutsch has told him to sit or go and support the Corey almost a number eight role, you know, the kind of way. And maybe he's just not ready for that eight role just yet in the Premiership. In the Belgian league, the French league, where he was before we signed him, and he only played obviously a half full of games there. If you, I would suggest it's a lot slower the pace wise. But yeah, it could be a case where, you know, you just tell him to sit himself and Garner and let the Corey be that additional forward as such. You know, the kind of way are certainly popping up behind the centre forward, whoever that would be. Mm. But maybe if maybe he needs things simplified for him, Joe. And I'm not trying to, as in you. This is what you do, and you stay in this particular area of the pitch, and anything that comes through, if you don't get it, you foul type of thing. You know, the kind of way. And
yeah.
Maybe it's that sort of scenario.
Similar to Alan, kind of did that job when he was there.
Yeah, yeah.
Just sit there, and like if that comes past, you tackle it.
Yeah, but is that the role that Deutsch want? Like, that's what I'm trying to say. Now, me, I'm not getting any point across. But is that what Deutsch? You know, does Deutsch want him to just sit there? Does he? And that's for me, it's the tricky part, because sometimes I find Deutsch hard to fathom. Particularly some of his decisions.
Get to that now in a second. It's
probably his, like, you know, I spoke about Deutsch last season. I remember saying that. I always felt that his decision making or judgment making in games is poor, and I actually thought it was quite poor again on Saturday just gone. As you say, we're going to get into that, but it's hard to know on Anna and exactly what Deutsch is looking for him to do. So he does need though to step up. I still think he will step up, but he needs to put the graft in, and certainly he needs to do a full 90 minutes instead of just doing 45 and then basically sitting on his arse for the second 45.
Yeah, bits and bobs. He just seems to have this kind of a free role, and he doesn't know what it is, and I don't know what it is. So maybe, like you said, he should have this is what you do, don't do anything else. Other people can do that stuff, but it's a strange one. Because, like, I still have high hopes for the chap. Don't get me wrong. I'm not slating him. I just thought like Rich said, he went missing. And he can't have that, especially second half. That, like, they just took over. And he was just looking at fellas going past him. So we can't afford to have somebody like that. Not a passenger. He's not that bad. But he just went missing too much. Just on Deutsch now, Rich. And there was rumblings in the Gladys. He just takes forever to make substitutions. Like the game, they changed. They made three subs at the same time. Mitrovic, Cover Reid, I think someone else came on at the same time. Pereira, I think it was.
Yeah.
Just changed the game. And he's just standing there fucking looking at his laptop with Steve Stone. I said, come on, just do it. Because if we can see it, surely he can see it. So his reluctance to make changes, like Holly said, I just don't get it. I just don't get what he's looking at.
Yeah, it's frustrating because you see the impact that subs are going to make. And I think that's going to be a big challenge for us this season with the extra length of games and people having the strength and depth to be able to make five changes and pretty much change half the team when we're struggling to make one or two until there's 10, 15 minutes to go. But looking at our options then, what do you change? You know, he brought on Danjuma and he brought on Dobbin. Other than that, you go through it. There's not a whole pile to go for. You know, you look at Cannon, Gomez, Onyango, Brantwaite, Mikulenko, Godfrey and Virginia. How do you change the middle of it to try to...
We're struggling up front. We're struggling up front. So he made the changes. But in my opinion, way too late.
Yeah, I mean, Danjuma, again, I suppose it's down to, right, what are they able to do? You know, I think we all wanted to see Danjuma, and I suppose if you'd seen him after the half hour, but, you know, we were still, honestly, we were comfortable in the game, but we were controlling long periods of it. You know, we were still creating chances, and, you know, I suppose it's the hindsight as well, saying, right, that it should have been wrapped up, but... You know, then you're said Dobbin is the other change that came on, who had done well in pre-season, but it's a different level coming back into there. And you know, it's a lot of pressure to say, right, you're coming in and you're going to change it. But, you know, I give him a bit of a benefit, judging that there's, for me, that there's nothing there to bring on. You know, that hopefully in a couple of weeks' time, by the time you have, say, you've Calvert-Lewin back, you'll have McNeil back, you'll have Harrison in, hopefully one or two more in as well. It's a different story, and you should be looking to do things. But on that, I suppose for me, I thought Patterson is the one that should have gone earlier and maybe moved Garner back right back and tried to change it that way, because I thought Patterson was getting a bit of a roasting down that side. And just to do something to freshen it up, maybe. I totally agree that needed to do something, but it's what to do, you know. It's what to do looking at what we have on the bench. For me, is to say that I give them the benefit of the doubt, and that it's not very obvious that there's no game changers in there to say, right, here coming in, whereas they're bringing in Mitrovic, they're bringing in Pereira, and they're bringing Deeker. And they took off Willian, who I thought was probably their best player in the first half. At half time, and then you're bringing on two game changers after an hour. So it's just that strength and depth, and I think it's going to be really, really costly for us kind of throughout the year until we do bulk up that squad with players who can come in, like, and that you trust to come in, that they're not just sitting on the bench for the sake of it, and there's too many of them at the minute.
Again, it's just a frustrating, like, sometimes it takes a goal for him to make a change, which shouldn't be the way, because, like, we're on top first half, four or five great chances, and I don't know, just for them to take over second half is really, really frustrating, mind-boggling. He's sitting there, like, I'm repeating myself, just looking at the game. We'll touch on the goal that was disallowed, Colley. I said initially when we come back into the window, and I was looking at the replay of it, I thought Tarkowski looked and waited for the keeper and backed into, but I've watched it obviously a few times since. How the hell that goal was disallowed, like a free on the keeper? I just never know. It's just
horrific decision, Joe. Horrific. And not even, like, you know, I think that the referee come out afterwards and say that he'd blown the whistle before the ball had gone into the net. Possibly, I thought I heard that somewhere, but That
just
going to
cover his arse.
Yeah, it was a shocking decision, and unfortunately, you're seeing some more then in the Wolves United game, and thankfully, them officials have been reprimanded for such a poor display. But I thought this season we might have seen a better version of VAR, but the officials better.
It's the same people there, Colin.
Yeah, rinse and repeat, Joe, isn't it, really? Yeah. You know, the kind of way. But in no circumstances should that goal have been disallowed. And again, you know, people say, oh, you always feel hard done by, but would that have been given if it was, say, Arsenal, Man United, or, you know, the kind of way, or one of the, you know, the Sky top six or whatever they're known as now, you know, the kind of way. And it leaves a bad taste in your mouth. And then you just hear that the crap bullshit story from the referees, officials, and, you know, it was a very, very bad decision, and one yet again that has gone against us, Joe. And, you know, I think Richie already mentioned in this podcast, I think if he's gotten one, we would have gone on and won easily that game, you know, the kind of way, because be under no illusion, Fulham were clinging on for half time there, you know, the kind of way. And that's just frustrating, Joey. You know, we let a team yet again back in. You know, Goodison, a couple of years ago was a fortress, but it seems to be just not a fortress anymore, Joe. You know, the kind of way. And it's just, I would have loved to get off to a great start, and it's the hope that kills you, Joe. You know, the kind of way. And plus, I had Michael Keane to score any time at 10-1. So I was rubbing my hands as well. But look, that was double disappointing for me, let's say, on Saturday.
Yeah, it's just the overall feeling of disappointment, because we played well enough to get something, at least a point out of the game. And just screaming out, like we said loads of times last year, the year before, screaming out for a striker who knows how to score different types of goals, not just tap-ins or bullets, just different types of goals. So I don't know where they come from.
Just on that penalty, Joe, before we move on, if anything, to give a free against Tarkowski for whatever he allegedly did, he was pushed into Leno as well by Robinson.
By Anthony Robinson, yeah.
He nudged him into it. So, I mean, and the thing is, when the technology is there and you want to say, right, let the player develop, and then you can make the decision afterwards. And he has that freedom to allow it, to disallow it if he needs to disallow it. So, yeah. It's baffling, you know. And when you've Mike Dean coming out, being the one in support saying that, right, that he got it wrong, it really says it all. But it's shocking. It's shocking. And it wasn't until afterwards, kind of watching it back, that I realised how bad it was, kind of from our side, we couldn't see it. But it's disgraceful.
Yeah, it's the thing that, like, in the ground itself, obviously because it was down the park end, we said, okay, no, he's way from VAR. People are looking at the screen, waiting for VAR and decision pending or whatever comes up on the screen. And when it didn't happen, everyone's like, okay, there must have been it. But to see it afterwards then, and, like, for VAR not to even say, Stuart, I think it was Stuart that way, Stuart, you might want to have a look at this. And if he comes to the monitor, what does he do then? Does he give the goal? It's like you said, Colin, you think he blew before the ball hit the back of the net. So what does he do then?
But what's the point of the rule if they're going to say, right, we won't blow if you're a mile offside, we let play develop and see what happens. But yes, yeah, Phil is about to tap it in and I'll blow it now to stop the goal.
But this makes thing,
no,
yeah.
No fucking sense at all.
It's just a muddy waters. Look, no, listen, fans don't know. I don't think VAR know. I think they make up the goal, to be honest. There's no actual set rules. I know there was a thing on Sky Sports. Harold Webb brought Carragher and Neville around and showed them all the fancy dance shite. But there's no point having 64,000 monitors if you can't get a simple decision like that. Like, it's a simple decision. There's no foul on the keeper. Give the goal. Play on. One off. I just don't get it. And listen, I know it wasn't our game either, Collie, but you're bang on. The United game on Monday. Hell, that wasn't a penalty. Like, you wouldn't see that in a Bruce Lee film. It's unbelievable. But,
Superman.
Yeah, well, it's not good to Gary O'Neill or Wolves show that to get a written
correct
apology.
Same with us. Listen, that happened us last couple
ridiculous
of seasons.
Yeah, absolutely the ridiculous.
Sorry about that. Whatever the call. Yeah, sorry about that.
Yeah.
Points. Shocking. They don't get the points, but it's just disgraceful. Just wrong. Oi, let's just park that full of both there. For fuck's sake. Another one down the line. Actually, just what I have it written here. I don't know whether you noticed, Rich. We spoke last week about Tarkowski getting the armband. And I watched Pickford. Now, he's very, very frustrated. A couple of long balls. Now, again, he can be his own worst enemy. He tries to play Hollywood passes when a simple ball is on. But he was very frustrated. And he had a couple of goals at Tarkowski. He told Tarkowski, obviously he has the armband, he's telling him what to do. And he didn't look too happy. Two or three times. So I'm just hoping that this, the fact that he hasn't got the armband now isn't going to affect him.
Yeah, to be honest, it's not something that I noticed at the time. But look, I don't mind fellas kind of being vocal with one another.
Absolutely not, and
I think I would presume, you know, at that point, you know, if they're, when we're forced to go along or whatever, that there's frustration built into it as well, because whether it's late in the game and we're after going behind and different things, whatever, you know, things are escalated a small bit. But I think two leaders, you know, I hope you're right and that there's not any kind of, he's not pissed off about it, but I think these things happen. So ultimately he's only a vice captain anyway, and I think, you know, I think the way Patterson played the weekend, Coleman will be back in as soon as he's fit anyway, so it's not going to make much of a difference, and you just want leaders on the pitch. But yeah, you just hope that you think that he'd be mature enough and step up, and that's not something that's happening.
Maybe it's just a moany goalkeeper like them all.
Yeah, that's, look, like that likes to be heard.
I can hear Don Berry shout, shut up.
just before you move on, Joy, I think we've gone through a lot of the poor stuff, and obviously there was a lot of good as well. I thought Iwobi was excellent. I thought it was one of his better games. I thought he was at the heart of everything we did, kind of defensively and attacking. Just, yeah, he's an interesting fella, given his contract predicament and everything, and I'm just wondering what you think about his situation kind of going forward, given that the window is coming to a close.
Holly, you're the transfer man.
I wouldn't surprise me if he goes to Saudi Arabia before their window shuts. May not necessarily go before the window in England shuts. I think he'll wait and see if any other players come in between now and the end of the Premiership window. Or he'll just stick with the club and leave for free at the end of the season. I actually felt sorry for Garner the other day. Garner's not a right side of midfielder. You know, you're talking about Onana and stuff like that. Garner, for me, should be the one sitting in there. I think he has the potential to be that the player that we need. You know, that kind of, he can open up. He's a good passing range on him. He can open up defences. I probably would go against the grain and say I'd like to see Iwobi stay. I think he's a workhorse. I know that probably won't go down well with a lot of people that listen to the podcast, but look, this is all about opinions and stuff like that. I'd actually like to see Iwobi, if he did. Obviously, Harrison's on board now and McNeil is on board, and you know, they won't be back till after the international break, I would suggest, but I wouldn't mind seeing Iwobi in the middle and giving competition to Corey and let Onana or Garner and Garner, two out of them three sit, and just let Iwobi then play as the, you know, number 10 or such, or behind Calvert-Lewin. That's where I would prefer to see him. But that's just, again, that's just a personal thing. And again, with Iwobi, in fairness to Telwell, I think it's all down to wages. Iwobi wants X amount, and we're not prepared to give him X amount. We're probably prepared to give him X minus 10 or X minus 20. So is there a middle ground there? I don't know, Joe. I hope there is, because I know he got an awful stick, but, you know, in fairness to the lad, he's very rarely injured, and he's a workhorse, and he get up and down the pitch for you all day long, you know?
Yeah, I think about Iwobi is, against the frustration, he can either be an 8 or 9 or a 2 or 3. There's no middle. He doesn't have normal games, if you know what I mean. I'm a colleague. I would keep him. Unless, of course, someone comes in for absolutely stupid money. But again, I think it would weaken our squad if he went. But so I would keep him. Again, I know we've all had a go at him, but every now and then he turns in great performances. So, yeah, I would just edge on keeping him. But if someone comes in for stupid money, which is happening every day of the week now, Saudi Arabia, I would take it. Once it's invested, that's another thing. Not by taking money 2 days before the end of the transfer window and leaving us like stuck. So, yeah, I would keep it. Right, so we move on to Villa. Another hard game. Villa are always hard, and it's just all the Watt goals, as a mate of mine calls them, just seems to score against us all the time. But couple of big injuries. Richie, Tyrone Mings looks like he's gone for 7-8 months, if not the full season. Buendia as well. So they're two big losses for them. But again, I just think away form is it's horrible. It's just ridiculous. We just don't turn up when we play away. Again, the danger, man, I don't know if he's still there. Bailey, is he still there, Rich?
Yeah. Bailey. Go ahead.
McGinn, another one. And again, obviously, Holly Walkout. So I just fear for us going into this. No, they took a pasting last week against Newcastle, but I still fear for us going into this game.
Yeah, you think back to this time last year when we were playing him, like, and you were going in and said, should be beating Villa, and we got turned over there, but it's a completely different side, Villa side, from that, and it's probably, I won't say a completely different Everton side. We haven't progressed at all, obviously, and they're a totally different outfit. You know, Emery's super manager, and he's got them playing, and obviously, look, they took a hiding the other day, but it's hard to read too much into it. Invested really, really well. I think Diaby will be serious player, and once he kind of settles a small bit, and I said Watkins and Bailey, and then you'd be worried about that pace running at our defence. Tarkowski, Keane, you know, 38-year-old Ashley Young as fit and as lively as he is, you know, at 90 minutes getting run at that, getting legged at. It's a bit of a worry, you know. They have some ball players there as well. They're a good side, and they'll be hurting after the weekend as well. They'll be out to put a wrong first home game. It's hard to be too optimistic about it, to be quite honest, and to be expecting a whole pile. But I think out of the first four games, it's the one that we all wrote off. But for me, it's just the disappointment of getting nothing on Saturday, that you're going into this and the potential of two home losses coming into nearly a must win against Wolves next week. But yeah, look, Villa are going to be, I won't say they'll be contested, but I think they'll be up the higher end of the table by the end of the season. So it'll be a big test. I would expect us to kind of go in and just kind of set up our stall and look to counter on the break. Hopefully we will have Dom for some bit of it that might give us a bit more of an out ball to hold it up and to bring others into play. But other than that, I don't expect a whole pile of other changes given what's available.
Yeah, I think it'll be similar to most away performances. Probably we just sit in and mop it up and just hope to play in the break.
Yeah, there's not really other way to really play it, Joe. There is, I'm slightly against the grain as to what Richie said there. I am optimistic from the point of view as Mings is out, and you know, he's gone for, as you said, a good season, possibly. Pau Torres, they brought in, left-sided centre-back, really, really, really good player, but needs time to settle in to the Premiership, and has come out this week and spoke publicly about the pace of the game. Diaby, absolutely fantastic player, and the one I would fear most, and obviously Watkins is, you know, he just scores against us. It's just one of them players. There seems to be a lot of them players in the Premiership, but Watkins is one that, you know. But for me, Joe, if Calvert-Lewin has 45 minutes in him, he has to start that game. And if he starts the game, we think we get something out. We don't lose the game. Because I think Calvert-Lewin will be a handful for... I'd say they bring in Konsa in alongside Pau Torres. Konsa has his ups and down days, that's for sure. And I know one or two Villa fans, and they wouldn't have great faith in the chap. Pau Torres, again, settling into the Premiership. Would he like the physicality of Calvert-Lewin jumping up against him? But we need to have them runners off Calvert-Lewin. I think you'll see Garner and Iwobi back where they started against Fulham because of their work rate. McNeil is still out, obviously. Harrison has come in, but he's just not there yet. So you would think that it'd be very much a counter-attacking style of play. If Maupay starts, and I genuinely fear that he will, we'll lose Joe, absolutely. We'll get turned over. He's just... you know, does Dan Gilmer come back? These are all questions that, you know, Deutsch will have in front of him, and the questions that will need to be answered if he starts the same 11 against Fulham, which, going on recent performances or recent games, he wouldn't put it past him. But he then needs to explain himself as to why Calvert-Lewin doesn't start the game, and he done 90 minutes against United in a behind the closed, you know, closed doors game. You know, why isn't Dan Gilmer playing? So he needs to maybe a little faith. Now, I understand with Calvert-Lewin, they don't want to rush him back because they wanted to have him more this season than we did last season, obviously, with his injury, etc., etc. But it just boils down to the first line of this podcast, Joe. The club have let us down for the last 3 years running. They're counting on Calvert-Lewin's fitness to get us through the season. Like, it's absolutely disgraceful. The narrative is shocking, and the owners, whoever, should be ashamed of themselves. But it is what it is, and we are where we are. But if Calvert-Lewin starts the game, I think we actually could get something out of it. I really do.
Yeah, if that's
true. Yeah.
Right, we'll just wrap it up now. We'll get into predictions. Chris has gone for 3-1 to Villa. Collie,
I'm going to give you two results. Maupay. Joe, I'm going to go for I'm going to go give you two results. One, if Maupay starts, I think we lose 2-0. Calvert-Lewin starts, I think we can actually come away with a win. 2-1. I think Emery could be, after last week's defeat, I think that plus to the injuries that they've accumulated, it will be a tough game. There's no question about it. But it just has a sense of the Brighton game last year where we went down there. I know McNeil obviously is not playing for us, but has a bit of a tough feel to it for me.
Okay. Which one are you going for, by the way?
Go on, I'll go 2-1 to the Blues. Go on.
Okay, go on. Rich?
I think it's a game that neither of us really want to lose, you know, so I'm going to go 1-1, just hoping that we'll both kind of get something on the board and, well, not that we'll both, hopefully we'll win it, but yeah, I think 1-1.
Yeah. I just can't see us getting that in the way. Again, coupled with their result last week, they'll be fired up big time. First home game for them as well. And then their lack of firepower is just, I don't know. I just don't see where the goal's going to come from. So it's going to go 2-1 for us. And again, I think everything depends on Calvert-Lewin. Even Dan Juma, it just depends on what kind of part they play in the game.
Will he start Kane, do you think?
Yeah.
I think so, yeah. I thought he'd done okay last week. He was steady enough. No, steady Eddie. There was nothing spectacular and nothing glaring mistake-wise. So I think so. I think it'll be similar to last year. He'll persist with Kane until he makes a couple of absolute howlers. And then we might see a change. But yeah, I'd start. Okay, that's the thing. The Villa game. Just before we finish up, lads, I just want to mention the tragic news the other day. The young lad, Michael Jones, who lost his life working on Bramley Moor. And on behalf of us on the podcast, and then obviously the Irish Toffee Sports Group, just want to send our thoughts and commiseration to his family. Horrific, horrific time. Only a kid, 26 years of age. Followed Everton home and away as well. So, I don't know. Just can't comprehend the lads. It's just horrific, horrific news. So, like I said, we send our condolences onto the family. Okay, boys. So, we'll see you next week at some stage.
All right, lads.
Cheers, lads.
Take care.
Thanks very much. Have a good one.
Bye-bye.
Thanks for listening to the podcast. If you're interested in joining the Irish Toffee Supporters Club, just send an email to memberships@irish-toffees.com or visit our website www.irish-toffees.com. Up the Toffees.